And the majority of that hour will be spent just saying how good Bayern were. We're going to hold off on that for a little bit, of course, but we do have our first guest already and waiting on the show today. And it is, of course, a man who we haven't had enough of on this show, considering how much both Rafa and myself have almost fallen for just his voice more than anything. Mr. George Mateus from the Mad About Football show is joining us on the line. George, man, how is the best voice in radio doing? I hope it's not been affected by any yelling or barking from the Champions League.
No, it's still intact. It's still intact. You know, I was able to get some breakfast and whatever, so it's all good. But it's still intact, yep.
Very, very glad to hear, mate. Very glad to hear indeed. You won't be too glad, because I know you're obviously a world football connoisseur, but you won't be too glad about how your Inter Milan side is faring towards this final stretch of the season. Do you think, as a fan, Stramaccioni's in trouble at all?
Oh, yeah. No doubt about it. No doubt about it. I know Massimo Moratti is not too happy with the results. It's looking like they'll barely make it into the Europa League. And the way they crashed out against Roma in the Coppa Italia semifinal was disappointing. Inter Milan is a club, they want to win a title, a trophy every season, whether it's the Scudetto, Champions League, Coppa Italia. So I think Stramaccioni's in trouble. I'd like for him to stay because he knows the youth system. He's giving a lot of Inter youth products, more PT. So I think they have to be a little more patient, but it wouldn't surprise me. And you know this, Oliver, you know this. Coaches, they come and go so quickly. A lot of times they don't have enough time to prove themselves because the owners get impatient with results. So it wouldn't surprise me if he goes, but I would like for him to stay at least one more season.
I mean, a lot of the problems towards this kind of poor run of form is just the injury crisis that Inter have right now. And that game against Roma kind of summed it up with Cambiasso getting injured just before even the kickoff.
Exactly.
So how much do you think Stramaccioni will kind of put that case forward for, hey, you can't get rid of me. This isn't my fault. This would happen to any manager in this situation.
I would hope so. I would hope so. Remember, no Diego Milito. Palacio is hurt. You're talking about your top two goal scorers. Diego Milito is a guy who can give you 20 to 25 sometime. Well, actually about 20 to 25 goals a season. Those kind of players are very tough to replace or to overcome and still challenge for a title. So I hope so. I hope that he uses that and say, hey, next year we'll have a healthy squad and we'll do much better. Because between Cassano, Palacio, and Diego Milito, that might be the best goal-scoring attacking trio in the Serie A. I know Juventus, they don't really have a top, you know, superstar goal scorer, but you know, they spread it out amongst the whole starting 11, it seems like. But in terms of just three players, concentrated goals, Inter might have the most dangerous between those three, and really didn't get too much PT all three of them together. So I hope he makes that case and he fights for his job.
We've got obviously Inter, Roma, Lazio, and Udinese all fighting for that final Europa League place. In terms of what you've seen over the last few weeks in form, the resurgence of Roma, the rise and fall continuously almost week to week of Lazio, how do you rate Inter's chances of keeping hold of that Europa League spot?
Oh, I think it's very good. I think it's very good. Obviously, me being an Inter fan, I'm going to be positive. But I think it's very good. You mentioned the erratic nature of Lazio and erratic nature of the other teams. I think they're going to hold on. They still have enough talent to at least finish for Europa League. Champions League, out of the question, but they still have enough talent to finish for Europa League. So I think it's very good. But they're going to have to put behind what happened against Roma. They were able to get a victory against Parma this past weekend, so that was good. But I like their chances. If I have to put a number on it, it's in the high 80 percentile.
Very confident Inter fan indeed, George. All right,
yes, sir.
All right, I'll see that. Look, Serie A's title race is still open, but barely, as is La Liga's. But two title races, one wrapped up this week into the top leagues in Europe. But obviously, Manchester United winning number 20, Robin van Persie's hat-trick, etc. To what point do you defend the people that say United bought this title in the same way that City and Chelsea have bought theirs, because they went out, paid the money for Robin Van Persie, and he has been the linchpin to this United success this year.
Right. Well, as an Arsenal fan, you know I can't stand Manchester United. That's just me. As an Arsenal fan. But what team doesn't buy a title? The modern game, the way the transfer market is set up, you buy the players. That's the way, the nature of the beast, if you will. So to say that they bought a title is pretty much what every team does that wins a title. They buy players that help them win a championship. So it's an argument that people make to try to, to devalue what Manchester United has done. But the fact is, they were smart enough to go after Van Persie, who was not happy at Arsenal, and he paid off. It paid off. And Sir Alex Ferguson is an excellent coach who knows how to put Van Persie and the other players in the proper situation. So did they buy a title? Not really, because buying a title really means you paid the referees off. You paid the FA, and they cheated for you. That's what when I say buy a title, that's what it sounds like to me. Did they buy the players that got them the title, a la Manchester City and Chelsea? Absolutely. But that's what you're supposed to do. So you can't take away from what Manchester United did this season. They deserve to be the champions.
You talk about putting him in the right place to score goals, Robin Van Persie, and one hell of a goal, that second one, on Monday night against Aston Villa. Fergie calls it the goal of the century. Out of the goals that you could pick off out of the top of your head, where does it rank? Because it's something very special, but we've seen some very special goals watching football, George.
Oh, my goodness. It was great. And to tell you the truth, I've seen him do that a couple times with Arsenal. You're talking about that left-footed volley, just picking it out of the air. But, you know, the goal that stands out for me when I think about especially the Premiership is the one Eric Cantona scored. I can't remember who, but I just remember the celebration. He scored the goal. He chipped over the keeper. I think he dribbled around two people, got in the area, chipped over the keeper, and he just stood there looked around. I believe it was that old Trafford, just looked around as if to say, I'm the king. It's like the coolest goal celebration I've ever seen in my life.
George, wasn't that the goal after he'd just come back from kicking the fan, and it was like his return and his announcement back? It kind of epitomized that French arrogance that Cantona has with this amazing finish, the dinked lob, but also then the celebration as well.
Exactly. Yeah, that to me is the goal that I remember that stands out in my mind the most when it comes to, you know, the Premiership goals and Sir Alex Ferguson talking about goal of the century. That one stands out for me, yeah.
Where does Van Persie then rate, though, as Premier League strikers gone by? It's been two seasons now. We all questioned after last year if he could repeat the feats of last year. Wasn't obviously the exact same striker from last season, but still very impressive. How does he rate to you in terms of the Premier League strikers?
Well, he's got to be the best right now. He's has, but if my memory is right, he's got 43 goals over the past two seasons in the last two Premiership seasons. So something like that, something approaching 45 goals in just the Premiership alone in the last two seasons. So I think he's excellent. The only issue I have with him is he's got to do it in Champions League. That's what's going to set him apart and take him to the next level. And Manchester United, they have a great history in the Champions League. They've won multiple European championships. Four European championships? They've reached the final a bunch of times. So Manchester United, for Robin Van Persie to take that next step and be considered elite of the elite, he's got to do it in the Champions League. But within the Premiership right now, he's the best striker in the Premiership right now. And I know that's saying something with Luis Suarez doing what he's doing. But and I'm not talking about, you know, with his teeth. I'm talking about with his feet.
Yeah. You know?
With that. But he's got to be the best right now, with Suarez a close second.
You mentioned the Champions League there, and we'll move away from Suarez, because we had a lot, obviously, on Luis Suarez throughout this week on World Football Daily. Let's move to, you mentioned there, Van Persie has to do it in the Champions League, and a side that did it and look like they are going to do it in the Champions League, Bayern Munich. What an incredible performance last night, George, from a side that looks better than Barca at their best over the past kind of 5 years or so.
Yeah, absolutely. You're 100% correct on that. What impressed me the most was how well organized they were defensively. Barcelona, they were probing, they played their tiki-taka style, but they were able to keep Barcelona at midfield. They weren't able to, they allowed, well, let me put it this way. Barcelona could not get to the penalty area consistently, or even within 2 or 3 meters of the penalty area consistently. They obviously, during the course of 90 minutes, you're going to have one or two opportunities. Every team is going to have one or two opportunities to get close and have a chance in the penalty area. But they were far and few between. I think at halftime, or if I remember the stats correctly, they only had one or two shots on goal the entire game for Barcelona, as much possession as they have. So that's what really, for me, was incredible. The way they were able to organize defensively, keep Barcelona at midfield. Xavi and Iniesta barely moved forward. Messi got maybe 10 touches on the ball all game. That to me was the most important or most impressive part of that performance.
What should Barca have done with their approach to that game? You can talk about how well Bayern played, but what should Barca have done to counteract that? Should David Villa have played? Should Messi have been rested if he didn't look 100% last night? He looked way off last night. What could have been done from Tito?
Well, I think Villa should have played. I don't know how much of a difference it would have made, but at least you have another talented and explosive goal scorer on the pitch with Messi, another person that the Bayern defense would have to think about instead of focusing all their energy on Messi up top. But other than bringing back Samuel Eto'o, Thierry Henry, and Yaya Touré, I don't think there was anything Tito could do. I mean, like, really, I don't really think there was no one on the bench, not Cesc, not David Villa, no one on the bench that they could bring on, Thiago, none of them that could have made a difference the way Bayern's defense was organized that day. They needed a couple of players who could run at the defense, make the Bayern back line, make decisions, open up holes, and then another player with speed and explosiveness who could finish coming in those spaces and finishing the passes or whatever. And they don't have that. Messi's the only one. When you only have one guy like that, it makes it easy to defend. So, like I said, unless they bring back Eto'o, Henry, and Yaya Touré, there was no one on the pitch that could have broken down the Bayern defense that day.
Is this what we're seeing? You know, Lionel Messi, the incredible footballer, probably the best that we'll ever see in our lifetimes, arguably. But is this what we're seeing with the problem of Messi's success, in that Barca have focused this side entirely around him, and now it's cost them big players in terms of Eto'o, in terms of Ibrahimovic. It's now, because it's so focused around him, when a team's learned how to stop him, they're lost.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Messi's putting up these great goal scoring numbers and they're going to win La Liga, but continental success, as you mentioned, they've struggled because to beat the big teams in Europe, you'd need more than one good player, or well, Barca has more than one good player, but you need two or three explosive playmakers to go alongside your star. What Bayern has doesn't they don't have a superstar, but what they have are four or five really dynamic players going forward that can finish. Barca only have one, and that was the big difference. That was another big difference in this match. So I think that Messi dependency, the Barcelona club directors, when they were making their moves for player personnel in the transfer market, they thought, we have Messi, that's enough. Well, it might be enough to win La Liga, but it is proven over time, the past few years, that Messi is great, Iniesta is great, Xavi is great, but they still need a little more help, especially in attack with going forward. So I think you make a great point. They got maybe a little too reliant on trying to get the same type of player. And sometimes you need an Eto'o or Henry who is just going to say, you know what, this isn't working right now. So I'm just going to take somebody on, go toward goal, and you guys come with me. And they could have used someone like that against Bayern yesterday.
Madrid then tonight taking on Dortmund, are they more primed for success in Europe because of the fact that they have this, you know, three, four-pronged headed, four-headed beast in their attacking lineup?
Ooh, I don't know about that. Because if you take away Cristiano Ronaldo, and you take away Lionel Messi, and we say this on Mad About Football, those teams might be, they wouldn't be, they might not be top five teams. I know that sounds crazy to say. Cristiano Ronaldo, if he doesn't perform well against Real Madrid, they struggle. Not against Real Madrid, against Dortmund. If he doesn't play well for Real Madrid, they struggle. And that's been proven in the league and in Champions League. There are games, plenty of games in La Liga where Cristiano Ronaldo will rest on the bench. They're struggling against whoever, Levante, Getafe, and he has to come off the bench and rescue him, just like Messi does. So I think Real Madrid are in a similar situation with Barcelona. The only difference is Real Madrid, like you mentioned, they do have a couple more players going forward who can be, who can finish better. Benzema, Higuain. But Higuain's not a big game player. Benzema's a little bit more clutch, if you want to use that. So Cristiano Ronaldo still, Real Madrid might have what we call the, I call it, at Gold TV, we call it the Christie dependency. So it's, they can adapt a little bit better without Cristiano Ronaldo than Barcelona can without Messi, but the difference is not that great.
So do you see Dortmund being favorites going into this game against Real Madrid tonight in the Champions League semifinal?
Oh, most definitely. Most definitely. Remember, they played in the group stage and they drew in Madrid, I believe, and they beat them in Dortmund. So they have confidence. Dortmund have confidence against Real Madrid going into this match. And if Cristiano Ronaldo doesn't perform well, then Dortmund have a problem. Then Dortmund will give them some serious problems. And Dortmund have Lewandowski, who's a great finisher. You have Mario Götze, although we all know the rumors coming out is that he's heading to Bayern. So we don't know where his state of mind is. I mean, he's a professional, so I think he's going to give 100%, but that's been kind of lingering the last couple of days. Marco Reus is a very underrated player. He has double digits in goals scored in the Bundesliga, so they have the players. Jurgen Klopp, very well organized defensively as well. So if Cristiano Ronaldo doesn't come up big, doesn't perform well, I don't think Real Madrid is going to go through.
Are we seeing the changing of the guard, if you will, in European powerhouses of football? If Germany, say, could win a World Cup, would we suddenly be putting German football on that pedestal that we've had Spanish football on maybe 4 or 5 years ago?
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I think people forget that Germany has been to more World Cup finals, and I mean like the final game, championship trophy lifting game, more than any other country, even more than Brazil. I know Brazil has won it more, but with the Bundesliga kind of falling off the attention radar because of, let's face it, the superstars in Spain with Messi and Ronaldo and the big money in Barcelona, Real Madrid, and then obviously PSG getting a lot of publicity with the money they've invested, Manchester City, Manchester United. Bundesliga has fallen off the map the last 3 or 4 years, but people have to remember that Bayern Munich is four-time European champions. They've been to a lot of finals as well. This is, Germany always is a factory of football, but because of the success of the Spanish national team, like you mentioned, and then the big clubs in La Liga and in the Premiership, they haven't gotten the attention that they deserve. But if they do win the World Cup in 2014 and then Bayern go all the way through, Dortmund go all the way through and win, or one of those teams win, I think you're like you said, you have that changing of the guard with Germany reestablishing themselves at the top of the footballing world in Europe. Yeah,
George, you've got to give us a score prediction on this game tonight, and you can't be more wrong than we were yesterday in terms of picking the score for yesterday's semi-final. What's it going to be between Dortmund and Madrid tonight?
Well, you first. Where do you think?
cheers, yeah, cheers, George. Yeah. I'm gonna say what I've said over the last day or so. It will be Madrid getting through overall, but I think it can be 2-2 tonight in Germany.
2-0 in favor of Dortmund?
No, 2-2 yeah. Tonight in Germany. And Madrid will eventually go through with a win in the Bernabeu.
Oh, okay. Well, I think you're gonna get in this game. It's going to be a lot closer than 4-0. That's for sure. It will not be 4-0 either way. That's for sure. I'm going with 2-1 Dortmund. And I think in the second leg, I think Real Madrid squeak it out barely.
Ooh, all right.
But I want to see Dortmund go through. I want to see Dortmund go through.
German final. George, you're talking to an Englishman here. You can't be wanting an all-German final.
Well, you know what, though? When the draw was made, I was disappointed. I was disappointed in the semifinal draw because I wanted to see the Clasicos in the semifinal. I wanted to see Bayern Dortmund in the semi and Barca Real in the semi so that you could get a Spain-Germany in the final. I wanted to see that. And anybody, you know, you follow the game. Barcelona and Real Madrid have played, what, six times? And it would be a seventh if they both reached the final. And Dortmund and Bayern have played four times, but if both of them, and it would be a fifth if both of them had reached the final. So it's like, all right, we've seen it before. So let's knock it out of the way in the semis so that we can have something new in the final. But obviously, it didn't work out that way. So
it's it's the football gods, George. Sometimes they're just not with us, but they have given us two fantastic ties either way for these semi-finals, man. What's coming up on Mad About Football as well this week? Let us know what we can be catching on the podcast, man.
Well, Mad About Football this week, me and Juan just finished our little recording about what happened yesterday with Bayern, and we also talked a little bit about the Copa Libertadores, which is the South American equivalent of the Champions League. We're also got guests lined up to talk about World Cup qualifiers and more Libertadores stuff and whatever wildness that goes on in this beautiful game that we love. And what else? You know, we're on World Football Daily. It's, you know, just doing what we do, which is watch the game, follow the game, and talk trash and try to entertain. That's basically what it comes down to. Yeah.
Watching the game and entertain. George, you definitely entertain all of us whenever you come up on World Football Daily, mate. And we always checking in with the Mad About Football boys. It's been a pleasure to have you on. It's been far too long since we got you on, mate. And we look forward to getting you back on as soon as possible.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it, man. I always have fun talking to you guys. You guys are great.
Always enjoy having you on there, George. And enjoy the game tonight, mate. Let's hope it's as much of a thriller as we all hope it'll be.
Yeah, I hope so. Go Dortmund.
George Mateus there joining us here on World Football Daily, talking all things Champions League semi-final. And tonight, putting his backing squarely in favour of Borussia Dortmund. And you can just tell that George, I love that guy whenever he comes on the show. Top quality banter that you get on Mad About Football, creeping its way into World Football Daily. George, did have to question what he said when he said Luis Suarez, he just doing what he does, and we all know what he does. He goes around biting people. We're still waiting for the FA's judgment on the Luis Suarez case here on Wednesday's edition of World Football Daily. It was meant to be.